We haven't used the board much with the live streaming stuff, so this is not going to come across very well tonight or in the future whenever we do more stuff for live stream people, but kind of is what it is. So we are in Psalms 49. Psalms 49. All right, Psalms 49. And we got down to verse 14 last time, may have gotten through part of it. Notice verse 14. Like sheep, they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them. It's talking here about those in verse 13 whose way is their folly, talking about men in general. They think that their houses are going to continue forever. They think that their generation is going to just live on and on. And it says that this their way in verse 13 is their folly, yet their posterity approve their sayings, Selah. And so you have men's sayings passed down through history, and things that somebody said one time that sounded good to somebody else is passed on and on and on and on. And yet at the same time, they say that our Bible can't be true. You know, it's just weird, isn't it? But verse 14, like sheep they are laid in the grave, death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. And that morning is pointing to the second coming of Christ, when the Son of Righteousness shall arise with healing in his wings. So the prophetic dispensational overtone here is the second advent of Christ, which makes sense. It's a Jewish epistle, a Jewish psalm. Verse 14, the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning, and their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. We'll say more about beauty in the next chapter. But verse 15, but God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall receive me. And so, you know, we know the passage in Romans 8, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory, right? Now, what I wanted to do here for a minute, since these three things happened all together, notice three times, verse 14, like sheep they're laid in the grave. Verse 14, their beauty shall consume in the grave. And then again in verse 15, they'll redeem my soul from the power of the grave. Grave, grave, grave. Three times in two verses. So I wanted to, it's not so critical in this passage, but so I wanted to remind you for a little while about what it means to be Bible believers like we are. Believe it or not, those three, now I never go to Greek or Hebrew to prove anything other than the King James Bible, okay? So, you know, it's very unusual for you to hear me refer to Greek or Hebrew, and it's never to get more depth out of what we have. It's always to show you that your Bible's right, and they ain't got the light they think they've got. But three times in that passage, grave, 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 twice in verse 14 and once in verse 15. Grave, grave, grave. All right, that Hebrew word you may recognize as Sheol. It's in Hebrew. And Sheol shows up somewhere between 65 and 70 times in the Old Testament. I didn't count them exactly. And 31 of those times, the only word for hell in the Old Testament, at least in your King James Bible, was from the Hebrew Sheol. Okay, so every time you see hell in the Old Testament, of course, New Testament is Greek. In the Old Testament, every time you see hell, it's from Sheol. Now, the only thing is, 31 times hell occurs, but Sheol shows up something like 65 to 70 times. So there's 30 plus times left to be, swinging. And what happened with those is that sometimes the word Sheol is also translated the grave, and sometimes it's translated pit. So it's either hell, pit, or grave. And 31 times it's hell, and the only Hebrew word from whence comes hell in the Old Testament is Sheol. And so you start talking to folks who don't like the Bible. You start talking to JWs and such, liberals, liberal evangelicals. And they'll start talking to you about Sheol and how Sheol sometimes means the grave. And of course, they've been taught not to have any confidence in the King James Bible, right? And so there's becomes this controversy about what Sheol really means and how it should really be translated. What I wanted to show you once again here is that, you know, sometimes somebody asks, you know, there are folks that say they're King James, but what they really are Hebrew Masoretic text believers who think that the King James is the best. Or there are Greek Textus Receptus believers who believe that the King James translates the New Testament Greek the best. But when it gets right down to it, they especially have doubts when you come up on words like Sheol, which can be translated either hell or the grave or the pit. And they have, of course, immediately wondered if the King James translators were right. Now, it should be relatively rudimentary for you to say, yes, they are. And that's where I stand. I don't think you get anything in particular from the Greek or Hebrew. I don't believe it. As much as folks you know, try to lean on it, I think that it's darkness. I think that it's a post hole. You're digging straight down, and you get to the bottom, and you're at the bottom, and there's just not that much to learn, and you don't get connections. But I wanted to show you how this plays out. You believe it or not, from verse 14 twice, verse 15 twice. What do you think the word for, and by the way, the word grave in the Old Testament has more than one Hebrew root, more than one Hebrew word. And the word pit also has more than one Hebrew word that's, you know, translated pit sometimes. What do you think grave in these three occurrences is? Well, I probably wouldn't bring it up if it wasn't Sheol. So in this passage three times straight, the grave here is from the Hebrew word Sheol. Now, I wanted to show you some examples, and then there's a couple of examples in particular I wanted to take some time with, because I believe those times show you that what you should be is a King James Bible believer instead of a Hebrew Masoretic text or New Testament Textus Receptus believer, and thereby, because those are the best texts and those are the texts the King James comes from, on that basis, you're a King James believer. Because what's become really treacherous in these last, you know, 30 or 40 years is that Ruckman shamed people into saying that the King James Bible is the Word of God. But what they really mean is that the King James Bible is the Word of God as long as it translates the Greek and Hebrew correctly. And they leave it up to themselves to be able to determine whether they did or didn't. That's not a Bible believer. Okay, that's somebody that has a Bible, kinda. Until it crosses the grain, right? So I wanted to show you some things, and all these words we're going to look at are Sheol, but take your Bibles, if you will. Let me just show you some examples here. Look at Psalms 9. Psalms 9. And by the way, it doesn't take any great, tremendous training to do this. If you have linguistic tools, and actually a computer program a lot of times does it for you. You can look these things up and figure them out. You learn to track things forward, track things backward. It's just not that hard. So I'm not trying to impress you with anything here, but I do want you to get this. Look in Psalm chapter 9. Psalm chapter 9 and go down to verse 17. The wicked shall be turned into hell, and all the nations that forget God. Okay, what do you think the Hebrew word for hell there is? Sheol, okay? Because for what it's worth, always in the King James Old Testament, anytime you see the word hell, it's from Sheol. Problem is, sometimes the King James translators translated it grave And sometimes they translated it pit. Now, what you have a tendency to see, and by the way, this is true too in the New King James, is that the new versions, especially the NIV, the ASV, the ESV, which is a big deal these days, they all have a tendency when they come upon the word Sheol, they tend just to transliterate the word and say Sheol instead of grave or hell or committing. They just say Sheol, okay? Which is, it's not a translation, it's a transliteration, right? Look, if you will, another couple places, look in Psalms. Chapter 18, Psalm 18. Notice verse 5, Psalm 18:5. The sorrows of hell compass me about. Sheol. Okay, look in 16:10. And this is a prophecy about the Lord Jesus Christ, if I recall. Is that right? For thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. Okay, if you change that to Sheol, then you remove the doctrine of Christ going to hell. Okay? And all of a sudden, you have a New Testament that still says that, but the reference is to the Old Testament. So if you change hell there to Sheol, you got you a problem. Okay? Now, let me show you an example of what I'm talking about. Look in Psalm 55. Psalm 55. And this is what I mean when I say that I'm a King James Bible believer in this way. When the King James says a word, the form of sound words from Sunday school, when the King James Bible uses a word a certain way, that's the way it's used. That's it. You say, well, in another place in Greek or in another place in Hebrew, it was used like this. I don't care. I'm a King James Bible believer in believing what the Bible says, where it says it. When I say the Bible, I mean the King James Bible, not the Hebrew Bible, and not the Greek Bible, because you don't know how to translate it. If you've ever spent any time in a concordance before, if you ever just pick up a Strong's Concordance, go to the back, look up in the dictionary, find a word that you're interested in and just look at it, and you will find that Hebrew words and Greek words, especially Hebrew words, can be translated multiple ways. So that's what they've done these days, is they've handed students these tools and said, see, well, this word from Hebrew can be translated this way, this way, this way, and what's this way? There's seven different translations possible. So your Bible says this, but shouldn't you be open to the idea that it might mean something else? Well, no, I shouldn't be open to that. I believe that the Lord gave a final ultimatum and a final authority to the King James translators, and that it was settled there. Now, let me show you what I mean by that. Look in Psalms 55. Psalm 55, go down to verse 15. Psalm 55:15. Let death seize upon him. He's praying one of those prayers, and let them go down quick into hell. Okay, hell there is Sheol, right? But hell can be translated grave. So put grave in that verse and see what it does for you. Let death seize upon them and let them go down quick into the grave. Go down alive into the grave. Okay, I jumped in a hole. What's that to you? Right? If it's not hell, then there's no repercussions. Correct? So were the King James translators right there? Well, what makes you think they were wrong somewhere else? That's the thing. Look in Psalm 86. Psalm 86. See, I think the King James translators were the Lord's final arbitration on the language issue for English speakers and for us, as far as final authority is concerned. I think that a lot of things were jockeyed back and forth with Tyndale and Coverdale and all those guys, the Geneva Bible, the Great Bible, the Bishop's Bible. In the main, they were pretty firm and stayed in general, but there were just some things. And I think that those some things became settled and set when the King James translators put their system in place by which all four of those companies checked each other's work 14 times, and they all agreed on what it should say, and so that's what it says. And folks, don't let anybody kid you. The 1611 and 1611 said the same thing your 1611 today says. There were Gothic changes in the print. That's true. They changed some spelling because spelling wasn't set back then, as Brother Gipp explained when he was here. But the bottom line is the King James Bible you hold today is the King James Bible of 1611. It's just a different edition. Okay? And by addition, I just simply mean there were some minor changes of spelling, which, as Gipp went through, it's just an addition. It's not a new translation. You understand? Psalm 86, let me show you this one. Psalm 86, go down to verse 13. For great is the mercy, is thy mercy toward me, he says, and thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest Sheol, says the ESV. From the lowest grave. Would that be a legitimate translation? I mean, one grave is lower than another? No, it's the lowest hell. See, it can't be pit, and it can't be grave. The only thing that makes sense is that it's hell. And so my point is, folks, seriously, here you have one word, and it's translated all the way through the Old Testament, sometimes hell, sometimes grave, sometimes pit, as the Lord led those translators. A lot of times you look at those places, and it wouldn't make any kind of sense to do it any different. You say, what's the point? You have the final authority in your lap. We're not King James Bible believers insofar as the Greek and Hebrew are concerned. We're King James Bible believers because we're King James Bible believers. And because we are confident that God did something through the King James translators that He did through no others and does through no others. I don't care how many new ESVs come out, they're never going to get it right. They just keep making the same mistakes over and over in the same places with the same rotten, stinking translations. It never changes. They basically change the same places. The NIV, the NASV, the ESV, the Good News for Modern Man, the Living Bible, they all change the same verses, basically. And they never get it right. And by the way, the New King James Bible is more treacherous than the others because sometimes it does it right and then a lot of times it does it wrong. So don't ever be tricked into thinking a New King James Bible is a King James Bible. Now, let me just take this a step further and show you what I mean in particular about some things. Look in Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah 14. All right, if you're familiar with Isaiah 14, you're familiar with the idea that the Lord is addressing the devil, Lucifer, right? Through the king of Babylon. In Peter's day, the Lord said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." He turned and engaged the devil in Peter and addressed him as Satan. He's addressing the devil through the king of Babylon in verse 4 in this passage. Now, I know a lot of you are very familiar with it. Notice verse 9. He's talking to the devil here through the king of Babylon. And he says, "Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, Art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy viols..." That's violas, that's violins. "The worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee." So he's going to a place where the worm dieth not, and the fire's not quenched. We're talking about hell here, right? Verse 12, and I'm reading this to make sure it's clear to everybody. "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer?" Wait, he's addressing the king of Babylon in verse 4. He's addressing the devil in the king of Babylon. And he says, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground which didst weaken the nations? For thou wast said in thine heart, I will ascend unto heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God." That's what got the devil pitched off as the covering cherub. That's where he fell. That's where he became Satan. Okay? You're looking at the fall of Satan here. "I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit." Now, everybody okay with that being the devil? We good? Somebody nod. Okay, whatever. Now watch. Here's what we're after. Verse 9. "Hell from beneath is moved for thee." Okay, hell. That's the word Sheol, just like you would predict, right? Verse 11. "Thy pomp is brought down to the grave." Now that's Sheol as well. So in verse 9, he translates Sheol, hell. In verse 11, he translates Sheol, grave. "Thy pomp is brought down to the grave." And that's where pomp goes, right? Pomp doesn't follow somebody to hell. Pomp follows somebody to the grave. If they got really ritzy, nice clothes and jewelry on, they can be buried with them, but they ain't going to hell with them. Right? Okay. Verse 11. So there you have the same word already in the same passage. He just said hell in verse 9, and they've translated it grave in verse 11. That's the same Hebrew word. Think about this. You're a Hebrew scholar, and you're sitting there with you're sitting there with a Hebrew before you, and you've just translated it hell in verse 9, then you translate it grave in verse 11. Now watch, going all the way down to verse 14, talking about what the devil said. "I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." And now the Lord speaks, "Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit." That hell, once again, is Sheol. So you have already in this passage Sheol three times. First time translated hell, second time translated grave. Third time translated hell. Same word, same passage. If you were a Hebrew-only person who thought that maybe the King James was wrong, you would have your problem, right? Because you have no final authority. Because how would you know whether you should translate Sheol hell twice and grave once, or grave twice and hell once, or grave three times or hell three times? How would you know? Right? Unless God led you. That's what I hold happen. I believe that God led him. Now, it's not the end of the story quite yet, because notice down in verse 19, he's still addressing Satan. "But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch." And just to really throw a kink in things, that grave there is from yet another word that we haven't even talked about. It's called a kibra. It's an entirely different Greek word. So you have grave translated twice from two different Hebrew words, but you also have hell translated twice from a word that had been translated grave in one of those places. You see, where you go if you're going to play this Greek game and Hebrew game, you confuse yourself. Aaron.
Verse 15, last word,
no. Different word. I thought about it. Yep. I checked it. Most of the pits in Isaiah and Ezekiel are not Sheol. Most of them are something Bora or something like that. But different word. Pit is translated once in a while from Sheol, from Hebrew, but in this place, no. Now, just, you see what I'm doing? Do you see what I'm giving you here? If you believe your King James only insofar as it translates the Hebrew correctly, well, you leave it open for correction. Because what if somebody comes along and says, oh, that was translated wrong? Okay, now who are you going to believe? You going to believe the King James translators, or are you going to believe him? That's the problem, okay? And I just want to say that I've studied this stuff through, and I have never found a place where I felt that the Hebrew scholar should be given the benefit of the doubt above the King James translators. There's just no places. Now, if you want to go look for them, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. Get your concordance out and run the numbers and run backwards and forwards and just have yourself a good old time and burn your eyes out. But I don't think you're going to get anywhere. Now, let me show you one more like this. And this illustrates what, to me, is interesting about this translation thing. Look in Ezekiel 31. Ezekiel chapter 31. All right, Ezekiel 31. Now, once again, he's addressing the devil through the Assyrian in verse 3. It's like just like addressing Satan through Peter or Satan through the king of Babylon. In this passage, Ezekiel 31, he's addressing him through the Assyrian in verse 3. Just to get yourself situated here, orientated. Verse 8, the cedars in the garden of God could not hide him. So now we're talking about the garden of God, the garden of Eden. In fact, in verse 9, so that all the trees of Eden that were in the garden of God envied him. There's somebody there. He's the devil. That was Lucifer. And he's likened to a tree. He's likened as the Assyrian, as a tree. And he's saying that all the trees in the garden of God were jealous of him, okay? So the address is once again to the devil. Now, keep going here. And he's saying, I'm going to send the devil down to hell and to the nether parts of the earth, the lower parts of the earth. I'm going to send him down to the pit, which he will. Notice verse 14. To the end that none of all the trees by the waters exalt themselves for their height, neither shoot up their top among the thick boughs, neither their trees... stand up in their height, all that drink water, for they are all delivered unto death to the nether parts of the earth. Okay, nether parts of the earth, that's the lower parts of the earth, that's hell, right? We good? Don't just sit there and say nothing. Say, yes, it's good. Okay. Verse, for now, I was all excited about this, and y'all are just sitting there going, verse 14, they're all delivered. Verse 16, I cast them down to hell with them that descend into the pit, and all the trees of Eden, the choice and the best of Lebanon, all that drink water shall be comforted in the nether parts of the earth. They also went down into hell, Sheol again, with him unto them that be slain with the sword, and they that were his arm that dwelt under his shadow in the midst of the heathen. So again, Sheol, grave, hell, hell. Same word. Translated twice, two different ways in the same passage. Look, it's like, can I show you, let me show you something real fast. That's what it's like. Look in Genesis. Genesis chapter 9.
Just one second. Okay. Let me take you to Genesis chapter 1. Okay, now this is about the gap doctrine. The gap fact. It's not a gap theory. It's Bible doctrine. You know how you figure out what Bible doctrine is? By studying words. Now watch. I said Genesis 9 at first, is that right? So are you in Genesis 9 or did you lose your that? Keep your little dinky winky in Genesis 1 and then turn to Genesis 9 for a second. Genesis 9:1, God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. The earth had been plenished before Noah, and now after it's been destroyed in Noah's day, he's telling him now go and replenish the earth. He's redoing something that was done before, right? Okay, very same word, in fact, the very same commission. Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. Talking about Adam and Eve. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth. The earth had been plenished in Noah's day, and it was destroyed in Noah's day, then Noah had to replenish it. If Adam had to replenish it, then it had been plenished before. And the Lord's saying, okay, now since it's been destroyed, now go and replenish it. That teaches a gap in Genesis 1. No, we're not trying to make room for dinosaurs. Okay? We're not trying to make room for dinosaurs. We're not trying to make room for geological ages. We're simply saying God made it, the devil fell, and because the devil fell and ruined it, then God destroyed it and started it over and was going to make Adam and Eve the inheritors of it. And then Adam and Eve messed up by believing the devil and things went south from there and here we are. But the fact of the matter is that it had to be replenished in Adam and Eve's day because it had been plenished before. Now, okay, here's what I was, that's all that was to get to this. Verse 28. Very same admonition as Noah later on. Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And so you have folks that say, well, that replenish, it just means fill. The dictionary just says it just means fill. Well, fine. If my truck is running on fumes, I take it to the Holiday up here and I'll fill the gas tank. But I'm actually refilling the gas tank, unless it's the first time I've ever filled it before. Ever. Right? Am I technically filling it? Yes. But even more technically, I'm refilling it. I'm replenishing it. You say, well, the Greek and Hebrew. Yeah, what about the Greek and Hebrew? Look, if you will, in verse 22. If you want replenish to mean fill, fine. Verse 22, and God blessed them, Adam and Eve, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the water. No, that's not Adam and Eve, I'm sorry. God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas and let the fowl multiply on the earth. Fill. See that word fill there? It's the same Hebrew word from whence comes replenish in verse 28. So, why did the King James translators translate it fill in verse 22 from the same word? And then translated it something else in verse 28. Uh-huh. Well, see, it really boils down. I mean, there's a lot more about the gap and all that. But what it boils down to is words. And since it says replenish, that means something different than fill. It means to refill. It means to replenish. It means to renovate. You novated the first time, then you renovated it the second time. Right? When you publish something, then you republish it the second time. When you edit something, you re-edit it the second time. When you replenish something the first time, it needs to be replenished again. And when you fill something the first time, it needs to be refilled again. Replenish. It's something different than being filled. Even though it's the same Hebrew. Now, who are you going to believe? The Hebrew scholar? or the King James Bible. That's the skinny. That's a skinny. Okay, any questions? If not, we're going back to Psalm 49. Did you have something, Aaron? You had your hand up a while ago.
Oh, just the 1828 Webster, he recants on that and goes to fill as well.
Say it one more time.
1828 Webster.
Yeah.
He goes with the word fill instead of replenish.
Yeah, that's what they all do. Yeah. That's what all the creationists do. And don't misunderstand, I like the creationists. A lot of those guys, they've done good work. But they all routinely hate the gap theory because they think somebody that believes that is trying to make geological ages for the dinosaurs to fit in, thereby propping up the evolutionary theory. I've hung around gap theory people for the entire time that I've been right with God, these 30-something years. I have yet to meet a single one that's trying to make this fit in the evolutionary theory. I've read guys that do, but none of the guys that I know that believe in the gap doctrine are trying to make the dinosaurs fit in. And millions and millions and billions of years. Not a single solitary one. That's the problem with the creationists. As good as their stuff is, the Pimbers, and now all those guys are running together, and I'm don't even know their names. But they all hate the gap theory, and they do not believe the King James Bible. You say, yes, they do. No, they don't. No, they don't. They're the Masoretic text, traditional text guys, and they like the King James as long as it agrees with what they think the Greek and Hebrew teaches. And they're wrong. Brother Steve? No, not all of them do. They do use it sometimes, but a lot of times they do translate it Sheol. They have a tendency to transliterate instead of translate it. And the New King James does that too. Say it one more time. They do that a lot of times too, depending on which one. But they're not uniform across the board with them. So, okay, we're back to Psalms. Psalm 49. All right, so verse 15, that's all we've done so far. But God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave. So, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? I know the soul doesn't stay in the physical dirt grave very long, but the idea is that the Lord's going to resurrect somebody from the grave, just like he resurrected Christ from the tomb, even though Christ's body was there. And his soul was somewhere else until he came and got back in his body. But verse 15. But God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall receive me, Selah. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. The glory of his house. When the glory of his house is increased, then don't worry about it. Now, that brings up the idea of different glories. Just look at one verse here. Look in Jeremiah chapter 9. Jeremiah chapter 9. There's different kind of glories. Men glory in different things. And I don't know that they're all listed here as such. But Jeremiah chapter 9. And go down to verse 23. Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom. Well, it's what wise men glory in is their wisdom. The smart people that you know, they're so glad that they're smart, they can hardly stand it. It's a great source of pride, right? It's a very likely fall a-coming because wise men tend to be pretty haughty. But that's not the only tripping point here. Verse 23. Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Boy, the strong men, they think that they can take on a freight train and still win. And of course, they're still just flesh and blood, and nobody takes on a Suburban going at 70 miles an hour. I mean, there's a lady in Pensacola that got hit a few years back. She weighed about 95 pounds, and she didn't fare too well when the Suburban came across the intersection and rolled into her. But a 270-pound guy wouldn't have done any better. You know what I'm saying? It's all kind of relative. So a mighty man should not glory in his might. Let not the rich man, verse 23, glory in his riches. And that's what rich men do. Boy, when they get rich, money's everything. Right? Oh, Bill Gates, he thinks he is set for good. His money's going to buy him anything and everything, that he's going to die just like the rest of us. Right? But it goes on, verse 24, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight. So in other words, delight in what I delight in. That's what you should be glorying in. Now back to Psalm 49 and verse 16. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory, those riches, shall not descend after him. They don't descend after him. Like I said earlier, I mean, he's going to die and he can take jewelry and fine clothes as far as the grave, but they ain't descending further than that. They're going to lay in the box and just get moldy and old, right? Because it says, verse 17, his glory shall not descend after him. Now, I don't want to get off track too far for too long, but this will be a good thing to get through a little bit and close, because we were long on the other part, which I'm not sad about. But there's the issue of direction here. I know that, you know, most little kids, if you ask them where is hell, they think that hell's under their feet. And if you ask them where heaven is, they think that heaven's above their heads. Did you know they're right? Once again, I mean, I don't know how they get it. Maybe sometimes they're taught it and it just sticks with them. But there must be a ring of truth to it, because as it turns out, that's the truth. Right? Yep. Let me take you through some verses here real fast. Look in Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah chapter 5. Hell is up, hell is down, and heaven is up. Directionally. Period. You say, well, that's not scientific. No, it's Bible. Isaiah chapter 5. See, sometimes this stuff we hear all day, every day, you know, here in the world with politics and stuff, and then you listen to a scientist, and then you listen to a philosopher, and somebody says something stupid on the news, and a Bible believer gets the hair up on the back of his neck a little bit, because a Bible believer has the final authority. And I was listening, it's not wise, but I was listening for a little while this morning to Glenn Beck, who is, as a conservative commentator, sometimes pretty decent. The problem is he's a Mormon. Okay, and he gets real evangelical about stuff sometimes. So, in trying to convince me as an American today that he was, that I should, you know, beware because they're taking my country away from me, et cetera, et cetera. For instance, he brings up amongst the people of faith, and he considers himself a Christian even though he's a Mormon. If he's a Mormon like I know a Mormon, he ain't saved, okay? So he goes off on this thing with the Catholic Church and how there's, you know, in the Catholic Church, there's this movement now to adopt the Black Lives Matter stuff and all the socialistic Marxist nonsense. And he has a personal friend that, you know, is personally involved in that and knows this to be true, et cetera, et cetera. And so he wants me to lament that the Catholics are adopting Marxism, which if you knew Catholicism, who didn't know that already? Like 1,000 years ago. Right? Just like we've known from the start that the Mormons are full of wacky weed, man. Those people think that they're going to heaven because they have the right kind of underwear on. I'm going to heaven with my Spider-Man underwear, okay? Okay, I'm just kidding. Just relax, all right? So what's the point? The point is those guys are going off on stuff. They don't know what they're talking about. And so you get fed up with hearing things, and just take something as simple as heaven being up and hell being down. It's true. It's as true a doctrine as the deity of Christ. I have the final authority. I know it to be true because the book says it's true. Isaiah chapter 5, verse I was just kidding about Spider-Man, okay? Really. Verse 14, therefore hell hath enlarged herself, opened her mouth without measure, and their glory and their multitude and their pomp, and he that rejoiceth shall descend into it. Descend into what? Hell. Descent is down. Hell is down. Hell is under your feet. Look in Psalm 139. Psalm 139. Let's see if we can get through these before we shut her down. Psalm 139. 139, verse 8. If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. Where's heaven? It's up. I have to climb a ladder, climb some stairs, or fly. But heaven is up. And if I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. Look at another passage. Look in Isaiah 14 again. We were just there a little bit ago. Isaiah 14. I know this is rudimentary for many of you, but Isaiah chapter 14, verse 13. Okay, we just read it a little while ago. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? Fallen from heaven. He fell from heaven. You fall down, you don't fall up. Right? Son of the morning, how art thou cut down to the ground, that which didst weaken the nations? For thou said in thine heart, I will ascend unto heaven. It's up. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. We just were in Ezekiel 31, and it's throughout Ezekiel. Those that descend into the lower parts of the earth, the nether parts of the earth, they descend into the pit, they go down to hell. Look at Psalm 55. We were there as well earlier. Psalm 55. Psalm 55, verse 15. Let death seize upon them. Let them go down quick into hell. Let them go down quick. Like Korah, Dathan, and Abiram were swallowed up into the pit. Quick, alive. But they went down. Look at just a couple more places, then I'm going to let you guys go. Look in 2 Peter 2. 2 Peter 2. Second Peter chapter 2 and verse 4. For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into the chains of darkness to be reserved unto the judgment, he cast them down to hell. Look in 1 Kings chapter 2. Make that 2 Kings 2. 2 Kings chapter 2. Verse 11. Came to pass as they still went on and talked that, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire. This is Elijah, and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. He went up. And this is the last one, Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1. Verse 9, Christ is about to ascend. So I guess it's up, huh? And when he had spoken these things, while they beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly towards heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel, which also said, Ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus, which is taken up from you into heaven, shall so come in like manner as ye have seen him go into heaven. Heaven is up. Hell is down. And there ain't no purgatory. All righty. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir, Brother Dave.
Just culturally, up is always good.
Yep.